George Dineen. He's a criminal defense attorney for Butzel Long and joins me once again. George, good to have you back.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. What do you make of the judge's decision in this case to toss away that motion for mistrial?
I think it's probably expected. I mean, I think what you read of what he said, he definitely tried to flip it back to the defense counsel and say, look, you are able to stand up and make objections. And had you stood up and said, Your Honor, I object, this goes outside the bounds of the rules that you established, his objection may very well have been sustained. But since the defense lawyer sat on his hands and didn't do that, he kind of put it back on him. So I think that was probably a smart move by the judge.
So the objections certainly fall to Todd Blanch, but does the judge in this case bear any responsibility for keeping things on track, or is that solely fall on the legal counsel here?
Yeah, so look, everybody in the courtroom has a role to play. So the judge set the parameters. The prosecutor, I think what the judge said is the questions were appropriate. The witness was difficult to control. So the witness perhaps answered in her answers, gave statements that weren't called for by the question. Mm. And so, you know, you can't really blame the prosecutor. I think what the judge's ruling is saying, and, you know, defense lawyer should have stood up. But at the same time, the judge is in control of the courtroom, and if he felt independently that his rules were being violated, he certainly could have spoke up himself as well.
Hey, so now the defense and Todd Blanch is going to focus on whether or not Stormy Daniels' stories have changed from 2016 to now. Is that something that you would look at?
Yeah, for sure. So what the prosecution did by going into a lot of that detail is try to bolster her credibility. You know, again, these are events that she's talking about that were, 18 years ago now. So certainly there's going to be differences in every time a witness tells a story. But are there material differences? Are there things that, you know, that you're not going to forget, for example? I mean, I think she said at one point that she kind of blacked out, not that she was alleging that there were any, you know, that she was drunk or that she was drugged or anything like that. So, you know, for the act itself, or the alleged act, I should say, because he denies that the event actually took place, she's kind of, I guess, backed away from that a little bit, if you will. But yes, to the extent that she's adding a lot of details that didn't come before, that's going to be explored through cross-examination, for sure.
How does the NDA come into play here? Because she signed this NDA saying that she wouldn't discuss this, but she also at one point said that this never happened. And the NDA only further proved that. Is there, how does that, because that's a legitimate contract, how does that then come into play into this criminal trial?
Yeah, look, I mean, these types of NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, get entered into all the time, and I'm not, you know, I don't do a lot of that work. I don't have people sign those, but, you know, look, there's, you get the benefit of the bargain. So I think what she puts at risk potentially is the $130,000 that she got paid. There may be some other damages provisions that are included. I haven't read the NDA, but look, at the end of the day, I think she's told the story now many times, and I don't think anybody's going to come after her for violating the NDA, although maybe they will, and we'll see that coming down the road.
You know, the other interesting thing here too is, you know, from a defense perspective, I would imagine that it's pretty cut and dry. The questions that I would be asking are, and look, I'm just a simpleton, but the questions that I would be asking are, did Donald Trump pay you? If the answer is no, then my next question would be, did you ever actually receive anything from Donald Trump? And if the answer is no, I mean, isn't that a pretty cut and dry case at this point?
Well, look, I think that he didn't pay her directly, right? It was Michael Cohen who paid her, and so Trump paid her indirectly. At least that's what's alleged. And so that's kind of what this case is more about. It's more about the cover-up than the quote-unquote crime,
sure.
Although the cover-up here is the crime. It's the fact that she was paid $130,000 by Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is Mr. Trump's alleged fixer. And then Mr. Trump, through various payments of $35,000 over time, multiple payments, reimbursed that $130,000 and called them legal fees when that wasn't true. That's the prosecution theory. And so it's really a falsification of records case. So obviously the event and the salaciousness of whether there was an affair or a sex act and all that, you know, they've spent a lot of time on, but really it's what happened with the payment 10 years later, so in 2016, and how was that paid, and was Mr. Cohen reimbursed by Mr. Trump, and was it were records falsified to hide the nature of the payments?
All right, so I got a minute left here. If you're in this courtroom, you're a defense attorney, you're listening to what the prosecution is saying, how do you feel this case is going from a juror's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, look, I haven't obviously followed every single thing that goes on in the room. So everything is important that happens in there. How is Mr. Trump, the defendant in the case, how is he reacting to the testimony? So you hear a lot of reporting on whether he's looking at the witness, whether he's paying attention, whether he's closing his eyes, whether he's sleeping through testimony. You know, the jurors are watching him as the testimony is going. The jurors are watching the witnesses. The jurors are paying attention to the, the cross-examination if there are discrepancies that are pointed out, and all of these things matter. And you don't always know what the jurors are going to focus on when they go back in that room and deliberate. And some will focus on certain things, and some will focus on other things. And at the end of the day, you know, they're going to come to presumably a unanimous verdict. Now, whether that'll happen here or not remains to be seen, because, you know, you could have a hung jury where just one person, for example, refuses to convict. So that's certainly a possibility.
Criminal defense attorney George Danini at Butzel Law. George, thanks again. We always appreciate talking with you.
All right. Thank you, too.
Yep. We'll talk again soon.